From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Senate Bill 2172 is a somewhat comprehensive pension reform bill, and I will try to go through the provisions quickly. First of all, it creates a Tier 3 hybrid.
So I'm curious about the timing of this, given the recent sabotage of the grand bargain. Why this now? Why didn't you come up with this at the beginning of the session? Is this an opportunity for the governor to have something else to say?
There's no time better than the present, Senator Raul. There's talk of this, the negotiations are over, and that's not true, and I hope that's not true.
I'm confused, and I'm having trouble kind of believing that this has to do with urgency more so than with recharacterizing the story of undermining the grand bargain.
Absolutely. That's an absolute misrepresentation of that, and I take offense to it, and I'll just leave it at that.
Well, I've taken offense to a lot of the things that have happened in this room recently.
I've instructed the campus to go back in and find $30 million on top of this $20-plus in permanent recurring cuts that could be identified that we would effectuate if there is no resolution of the state budget crisis.
That's the SIU president, Randy Dunn. He says the Carbondale campus especially is in trouble, and a big part of the reason, the state budget impasse. We'll discuss that. Before that, you heard an exchange between the Senator Kwame Raoul, a Chicago Democrat, and Senator Michael Connolly, a Republican from Lyle. GOP seeking to push pension changes from the grand bargain in exchange for some money for Chicago schools. We'll discuss that as well. That and more coming up on today's program. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler. Charlie's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our Statehouse Bureau, Brian Mackey, our Illinois Public Radio Statehouse reporter. And joining us today, Reboot Illinois' Matt Dietrich. Matt, thanks for being with us once again.
Sure, thanks.
Matt and Brian, I'll leave this to you to start with. Let's start talking about SIU. That was a bit shocking to some people to hear how much money that SIU is looking to have to cut. And that's going to hit pretty hard, it sounds like, especially at the Carbondale campus.
Well, if you look at what has happened with higher education in Illinois over the last 2 years without a budget, what you've seen is Governor Rauner first came into office and proposed a budget in calendar year 2015 that would have cut higher ed by 30%. And everyone howled about that. And what's happened in the time since then, due to the budget crisis and the kind of emergency intermittent funding that's been given to higher education, is that universities have seen cuts of 35% over 2 years. And if the General Assembly doesn't do something, either a stopgap budget or get a permanent budget into place this session by May 31st, it's going to be higher than 35%. The grand bargain bill contained a spending bill that would have restored funding to 2015 levels. If that were to go into effect, what you'd have is a two-year period in which the universities get 35% less in state funding. And, you know, dovetailing on this, in a case of good timing, we had a report from Moody's Investor Services this week, and it brings up the possibility that if this goes on much longer, the state's going to be doing permanent damage to its higher education system.
Yeah, that Moody's report did some math and tallied up that it says the state has appropriated about $2.2 billion less for public higher education for the current budget year and the previous budget year than it would have if it had continued along the previous funding trends. I mean, that has led to tuition increases. Governor State had a 15% tuition increase. We've seen layoffs at a lot of the directional universities just in the last week or two. Northeastern Illinois University basically laid off, or furloughed, I guess is the term, its entire staff, including student workers, for all of spring break. Things are getting pretty desperate at higher education, and we haven't even talked about that's at an institutional level. Of course, the state's also fallen way back on MAP grants. These are the monetary award program. This is how Illinois helps people from low income backgrounds try and afford to better themselves by going to universities. And that affects not only public universities in Illinois, but private universities. And students have had to drop out. They've had to go deeper into debt because of that. And so that's affecting people at a personal level, not just at an institutional level in Illinois.
And I should point out that Brian, myself, and Charlie, all employees of the University of Illinois system. But Matt, let me go back to you on this. When it comes to SIU, and let me play devil's advocate here, SIU has seen declining enrollment for years. And this happened even before Bruce Rauner took office and this budget impasse began. So there might be some people out there saying, hey, they should have to cut.
Well, the argument has been throughout, actually for several years, that where the cutting, where you want to do cutting is in the administrative area. And there's been a lot of criticism, especially at the University of Illinois system, of, you know, bonuses are excessive, that executive salaries are excessive. So you can look at that kind of stuff, but the kind of cuts, the kind of reductions that we're talking about here are really, really severe. And you know, talk to students, or like Brian was just saying, this MAP grant funding, that really hits students hard.
And we're talking about education, higher education in a general sense here. There are other schools who are sitting there in pretty much the same boat as SIU. They're just not making news this week, but that's, you know, Western, Eastern, Northeastern Illinois University, many others that we've heard about. This is more widespread than just at one campus.
Yeah,
that's right.
It affects everybody. As a matter of fact, the institution for which all of us but Matt work is probably the best insulated against these cuts of any of the schools. I've said before that as the Illinois higher education system starts to collapse, the U of I will be the last domino to fall. But I think there's a sense out there among some people, why do we need to have English programs at every school? You know, why should we offer a Bachelor of English at Eastern and at Western and at Northern and at Southern? Shouldn't there just be one school to do that? That kind of attitude. And it's, I guess, from a purely theoretical perspective, maybe it makes sense. But on the other hand, these are regional schools. There are a lot of students at these schools who don't come from miles and miles away, but who commute to classes every day at a place like Western. They serve Western Illinois. Eastern serves Eastern Illinois. That's how they got their names. And the notion that, well, we can just avoid all these duplicative programs, I think reflects a lack of understanding of the communities that are served by these universities.
And we haven't even touched on the fact of the employment factor and how big and important that is in some of these areas, such as Western and such as Southern and Carbondale. These are the biggest employers, I should say, in those areas.
Well, and particularly in some of the rural areas where, like in Southern, once upon a time, coal mining was a big industry in Southern Illinois. That's not true anymore. Once upon a time, many of the small towns had manufacturing facilities. A lot of those are shuttered. So now for jobs, good-paying jobs, the university is probably one of the main sources in that whole region.
And Brian, let me move into another aspect of this discussion, because it really does come back to the budget impasse and what we've been terming and everybody's been terming the grand bargain, which is yet to be a bargain. It's not. It's just been sitting in the Illinois Senate. And a lot of questions about where that goes next this week. And we heard a little bit of that conversation at the beginning of the show. The Republicans started to make some moves to try to separate out a piece of the grand bargain. Tell us what's going on there, and then also tell us what you see as happening with that and what it could mean for an overall budget deal.
Yeah, so the grand bargain is a very complicated, very broad set of different pieces of legislation. Some of them are popular with Democrats, some are popular with Republicans, some are not popular with people in either party. And the idea was is that by sort of scotch taping and chewing gum, sticking together all these things, that you get something that everybody could at least live with at the end of the day. So it has changes in the workers' compensation system, which is the sort of some of the pro-business things that the the governor and Republicans have been pushing. It has a permanent change in state funding for Chicago public schools. The Democrats call that pension parity because right now the state pays pension costs for every school district in Illinois except Chicago. It also has a tax increase, which is pretty unpopular in some many parts of the state, and it also would actually fund Illinois government. And the idea was by putting all these things together, and there's more, you could come up with a deal that both Democrats and Republicans could live with. Well, we saw a couple of weeks ago there was voting on some of the easier things, some of the procurement changes, things that had bipartisan support. At one point, as many as 10 of the 22 Republicans in the Senate supported, in various combinations, some version of a grand bargain bill of this dozen or so bills. They went home that night, came back the next day. Suddenly, the Republicans said, well, we're not ready to vote on the rest of this. Turns out the governor's office had been communicating with either the governor directly or his top staff people had been communicating with senators saying, we don't think this is a good deal yet. And senators got, you know, after hearing that message from the governor, they got cold feet, didn't want to go ahead with it. And that's where things have been. It's kind of installed. The apparent, you know, we hear that from Leader Redonio and Senate, who's the Republican leader in the Senate, and Senate President John Cullerton, the Democrat, that they're still negotiating. But since that time, the Republicans have begun to say, you know, well let's move forward with just the pension, changes to the state pension system, and, you know, this one-year funding for Chicago public schools, which is different than the permanent fix. I could go on and on, but, you know, that was not greeted kindly. This idea of breaking apart the grand bargain, breaking up the band, so to speak, was not met with enthusiasm from Democrats this week.
And Matt, why is that important, Matt, to keep all of this together?
Well, the grand bargain was constructed the way it was constructed, 12 bills, and if any one of those bills failed, they all failed. The object was to lock everyone in. You vote for things that you might not like, but in exchange, you're going to get things that you do like, but the other side doesn't like. It's all locked together in one piece. And if you start pulling things out of it, the whole thing falls apart. And the problem with this pension reform idea that the Republicans want now is, you know, the Democrats originally, that was to create pension parity permanently. It had a formula that went into effect for Chicago schools permanently. And what the Democrats can do now is they can take Governor Rauner's words from his own budget address where he criticized the grand bargain's property tax freeze. He said it, you can't have a permanent income tax increase and a temporary property tax freeze. They got to both be permanent. Well, now it's almost like the Republicans want to have a temporary assistance for Chicago public schools in exchange for permanent pension reform, and that's not going to work.
This let the Democrats have a little fun with the Republicans at that hearing. You know, Senator Harmon was saying, suggesting, who's the chairman of the Senate Executive Committee where this was being heard, was sort of joking with Senator Connally, who we heard at the top of the show. Well, would you do maybe we could just change the pensions for 1 year since we're only doing Chicago school funding for 1 year, and then we could come back. Now, what Republicans will say is, you know, this deal predates the grand bargain. That last year there was a deal between Governor Rauner and I believe both Speaker Madigan and Senate President Cullerton that if we, you know, we will approve this 1 year of extra money for the Chicago public schools, but we won't sign it in. The governor, you know, wouldn't have to sign it into law as per this deal unless there was an overall change to the pension system in Illinois. And the governor perceived that the Senate president had, it was his impression that the Senate president violated that deal in December. I don't want to get into all that. And he ended up vetoing that bill. You know, so the Republicans say, look, we're just trying to go back to the deal we had last year. What they don't say is that the governor is now under a lot more pressure having to do with Chicago schools funding, in part because of a single tweet he issued a couple of months ago to Chance the Rapper, who surprised everyone by demanding or requesting a meeting with the governor, which did not go well and has prompted Chance and his many millions of fans to communicate to his many millions of fans that he doesn't think Governor Rauner is doing the right thing for Chicago public school students. And, you know, we've certainly seen in the past that Governor Rauner is sensitive to bad publicity. And so he seems to be, as people are continuing to point the finger at him for, you know, interfering with the grand bargain and what appeared to be on track for some votes with the grand bargain, he seems to be trying to change the narrative and put things back on Democrats a little bit.
We should probably throw in here, too, just to reiterate, the grand bargain, we hear so much about it, you forget what it even means, but the grand bargain was not going to be the state budget. The grand bargain, the intent was get it out of the Senate, get some progress going, send it over to the House, let's lay down a foundation and keep work going. It was intended to get things moving because, you know, for 2 years now, we've had no progress whatsoever. So these grand bargain bills were going to change probably a whole lot when they got into the House.
Yeah, it's not like it's, you know, the Declaration of Independence. You get one shot and signing your name to it for posterity.
And Charlie, the Chicago public school system, I think it's always a bit of a mystery when you're downstate because it's different. It's set up differently than what maybe your local school district is. If you're a Republican lawmaker and you say, hey, they've got a lot of problems financially and otherwise in that system, you know, we have to have some changes there to release this type of money. Is that really an unrealistic stance?
Well, it depends on what kind of changes you're talking about. For example, every school district in the state of Illinois, with the exception of Chicago and with the exception of the school district, it's technically a school district that's part of the Department of Juvenile Justice, elects its governing body, the school board. In Chicago, it's appointed. That's a change. As was already mentioned, the city of Chicago does not receive the same level of funding for its teachers' retirement system that downstate and suburban districts do. It gets a tiny little sliver. I think it has to do with health care costs, but it doesn't get the full employer share picked up as occurs for every other school district. The city of Chicago, the school district there enrolls probably somewhere between a fifth and a fourth of all the school kids in Illinois. It's the largest district. It's one of the, I think it's like the second or third largest school district in the nation. And most of those kids, the overwhelming majority, come from low-income families. They live in neighborhoods, a lot of them, that are war zones. And it's almost night and day compared to what you might find in a school district in the suburbs or in some rural community downstate. And so it's difficult, I think, for people to appreciate it. And there's always this regional, it's always, oh, this is a bailout for Chicago. And I remember, was it last year when Governor Rauner was downstate and he was, I believe he was in Vienna, and he was talking to the locals about, we shouldn't bail out the city of Chicago. Your tax dollars shouldn't go to Chicago to bail out their schools, that kind of rhetoric. If you look at the facts, and I did at the time because I was curious, the city of Chicago, percentage-wise, gets less of its school budget than Vienna does. The Vienna schools get something close to 40% of their budget comes from state dollars. Chicago public schools get around 34 or 35%. So there's these misperceptions that are going on. And when you have this constant state of political warfare, it's really tough to get anything done. And a lot of the stuff we've been talking about today goes back to the fact that we're in campaign mode. We've been in campaign mode for years now. The governor, in my perspective, the governor's got to back off. He's got to call off his attack dogs in the Republican Party, particularly their propaganda arm, and tell them, hey, take a rest now. We're going to try and move forward. Don't immediately jump out and attack the Democrats whenever they try to do something. Let's take a more reasoned approach. That is based on the assumption that the governor actually does want to get something done.
Well, the Democrats did come out with something this week, and the Republicans were very fast to jump on that. Something the Democrats are calling an answer to the governor's turnaround agenda. They're calling it a comeback agenda. Matt and Brian, what's this about, and what happened when it was announced?
Well, I think the what this mainly is about is for actually for a couple of years now, we've been hearing from rank and file Democrats that they were a little upset that they felt like their party had become the anti-Rauner party, that their only agenda was to be against everything Bruce Rauner proposed. And here, the Rauner administration has had this turnaround agenda ever since it came into office, and the governor has worked this agenda really hard, really consistently, and the Democrats have felt like we don't have anything of our own agenda. What are we going to do to proactively make this state better? And that's what you saw this week. A group of rank and file Democrats came together to introduce their comeback agenda. And from my perspective, the two biggest pillars in the comeback platform are, number one, changing the state constitution to bring on a progressive income tax, which is something that Democrats have wanted to do for a long time and Republicans are completely against. And number two, there is a portion of their agenda that they want to get the huge money out of politics in Illinois and enact a small donor matching program. Those were the two things that stuck out to me.
Yeah. Like so much in government these days, this is, I think, largely about communication and sort of framing how people think about state politics. And I think that the Republicans and conservatives more broadly have really dominated the narrative of Illinois for many years now in terms of our pension situation is terrible, we're so corrupt, and it's a terrible place to do business. And that frame has really, I mean, even you hear a lot of Democrats speak in those terms and say, well, of course we need to do things to improve the business climate, this, that, and the other thing. But there is a counter narrative that Democrats would say is that, you know, when somebody complains about burdensome regulations, you know, we think those are protections, not regulations. But it's, you know, that's kind of become the accepted way to talk about these things, or maybe not even accepted, but just the way that people now by habit talk about these things. So a lot of these ideas existed already in Democratic circles, you know, raising a minimum wage, certainly going with a progressive or graduated income tax where people who are wealthier pay a higher rate. And Democrats will actually say if you make, I can't remember if it's less than $100,000 or $200,000, but if you know, for the vast majority of Illinoisans, they say you'll actually see your tax rates go down. Just because a tax rate becomes progressive doesn't mean that it actually would raise more money necessarily. If you're lowering rates on the vast majority of earners in sort of the average person's salaries and raising them on people who are, you know, your lawyers up to your private equity investors who, you know, become governors would pay a lot more. And so this is, I don't want to oversell it. Like a lot of things, it was a bulleted list of 20 ideas and actually only five specific pieces of legislation or actually four pieces of legislation and a constitutional amendment. But it does give Democrats something that, you know, the governor will say, you know, I'm open to any ideas to improve Illinois. So why don't they propose some ideas and we'll consider those? Well, now Democrats are finally 2 years into the Rauner administration offering a more coherent counterpoint to that.
Well, you said it was a communication, and there was some communication this week involving the Speaker, Michael Madigan, and the governor. In fact, it came in the form of a letter, which the Speaker put out a pretty terse letter to the governor. What happened there? What was that about?
Well, this revolves around two of Bruce Rauner's highest profile projects. And really, if we were to go back just a few years ago when you had Republican governors and Democratic General Assemblies, these two projects should be very popular on both sides. Number one is Governor Rauner wants to do a public-private partnership and add toll lanes on inbound and outbound Interstate 55, the Stevenson Expressway, in and out of Chicago. And this is a plan that he announced a year ago, and he had Democratic support, you had business support, you had labor support for it. Commuters want to see this happen. Everybody, you know, it's pretty much in another circumstance would be a win-win situation. But the level of distrust is so high between Speaker Madigan and Governor Rauner that when the governor tries to have a press conference this week to tout his, getting this project done, Speaker Madigan, 20 minutes before, issues a statement saying that, well, IDOT hasn't given us the information we need. We're suspicious that the governor's trying to help his wealthy friends become the private investors on this. It's just a... To me, it's indicative of the level of distrust that's going on right now.
Yeah, and that letter you referred to, Sean, just briefly, was specifically about the sale of the James R. Thompson Center. And Madigan, using very strong language, says, the governor criticized Madigan for blocking the sale of the James R. Thompson Center, the big glass building in state building in Chicago. And Madigan says, while you were saying that to the cameras, my staff was meeting with your staff in a productive meeting about moving this forward. And it's quote disingenuous of you and beneath your office to make such false statements to the media when you know I've pledged my cooperation. I would say I differ a little with Matt that this is necessarily on a bipartisan basis, specifically regarding the toll lanes on I-55. I think a lot of... particularly Chicago Democrats are still feeling the sting over the privatization of the parking meters up there. And so there is some suspicion about these public-private partnerships. And certainly, but it gets back to Matt's point about the trust. If a Democrat had been proposing something like this, it would be viewed differently than if Governor Rauner is proposing it. And I think that has, like everything else here in Springfield, it has become poisoned by the mistrust and animosity between the parties.
Yeah, and picking up on that, the objections that were raised regarding the Thompson Center sale was that, well, there are certain zoning issues that have to be cleared up. There's certain variances that need to be dealt with. We have to make sure that whoever develops the site once the center is the current building is demolished will keep that metro, not the metro, the CTA stop that's there in the basement. And those are the kind of things that back in the day, I can imagine the conversation. George Ryan says, hey, I want to sell the Thompson Center. And the city says, well, here's the deal. We got to make sure about the CTA station. We got to clear the zoning. And George says, okay, fine. And he tells Madigan, hey, Mike, we got to pass this legislation. Once this gets taken care of, Mike says, okay, I'll talk to the people in Chicago, make sure the city council does whatever it has to do to clear the way. And it'll all be done kind of behind the scenes, and there won't be this kind of public bickering where the object seems to be not how can we work together, but how can I figure out how to undercut the other guy.
And we have time for one note from the field. Matt Dietrich.
In the theme of the never-ending campaign of 2014, which is quickly turning into 2018, Bruce Rauner is out with a new series of ads. This time, he's got a roll of duct tape, and he's accusing the Democrats of using duct tape to duct tape Illinois government together. This goes back to his theme in 2014 where he had a sledgehammer, and he was going to take a sledgehammer to Springfield. So there's definitely a tool theme going on in the Rauner campaign.
Yeah, and it's just to remind people, it's a year before the primary, and so far Governor Rauner doesn't even have an opponent.
That's all the time we've got for today. The members of our broadcast include Shirley Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and also Matt Dietrich with Reboot Illinois. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org and also find us on NPR One. Just look for State Week. Production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.